Hello and welcome to Press TV's debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, a new humanitarian mechanism by the United States is being created for allegedly relieving sanctions pressure on Iran to buy medicine and medical equipment. At least that is how it appears on the surface. However, the reality seems to be just the opposite. This is according to a former U.S. official. Well, stay with us as we take a look at the latest move by the United States to impede Iran's progress. Before that, let's take a look at this report.
The United States has announced what it calls a new humanitarian mechanism for trade with Iran.
A new humanitarian channel will make it easier for foreign governments, financial institutions, and private companies to engage in legitimate humanitarian trade on behalf of the Iranian people.
The new method asks foreign governments and banks to submit monthly detailed reports on humanitarian exports to Iran. Washington says this way foreign governments will certify that their transactions are in compliance with U.S. sanctions against Iran. But that's a point critics refer to as the main burden hindering humanitarian trade with Iran.
Let's be clear, there is unlikely to be a single banker in the world that'll accept these conditions and participate in the trade. The Trump administration is surely aware of this fact, and its humanitarian channel should be viewed as nothing more than farce.
A former American official also says many foreign banks would be unable to provide the level of detail required.
I think this is going to have a chilling effect. It will have the exact opposite effect of what they're claiming it will.
The former official also says the new measure seems to be aimed more at gathering intelligence than helping ordinary Iranians.
I agree with him completely. I think this is a purely political act. It has nothing to do with humanitarian issues. It's really a way to punish Iran.
The administration of President Donald Trump has been pursuing what it calls a maximum pressure policy against Iran since May last year. That's when Trump withdrew his country from the Iran nuclear deal and reinstated sanctions, including business restrictions, as part of that policy. Experts say the U.S., by launching its new trade system, is sending a message to Europe, too.
And I think what they want to do is to show the Europeans that they won't allow any kind of alternative economic mechanism to be created that would allow Iran to have some commercial contact with the outside world.
The EU, which is a signatory to the Iran nuclear deal, launched its own financial instrument earlier this year to help trade with Iran. The EU did so in the wake of Washington's threats that anyone breaching the Iran sanctions would be punished too. The U.S. says the sanctions and its pressure campaign as a whole aim to stop what it calls Iran's malign activities. Iran dismisses the accusations and says the U.S. sanctions are economic terrorism. Iran says the measure are directly affecting the lives of ordinary Iranians, among them patients going without vital medicine due to the U.S. restrictions hampering imports.
I'd like to welcome both my guests to the program, lecturer out of Coventry University, Kenneth Farrell, out of London, and publisher and editor, Politics First, Marcos Papadopoulos, also out of London. Thank you both for being with us. Let's start this off with Kenneth. Now, what is your understanding of this new humanitarian mechanism that the United States is proposing for Iran?
Well, it appears to me that this humanitarian channel is nothing more really than a Trojan horse. It's a way for the United States to gain some kind of leverage in Iran. It's tried many methods, and I think this is just another attempt for it to control the economic development of Iran. And I don't think there's going to be much discussion about that between us as guests. I think the question is to look deeper in that, to find out why this is happening at this stage. And I think this is part of what's called surveillance capitalism, the notion that if you can't exploit a market in traditional forms, then you find another way of doing it. So I think this is part of American expansionism and surveillance capitalism.
Well, Marcus, the U.S. has promised maximum pressure on Iran, basically trying to force Iran to acquiesce to Washington's demands. So Do you think this same country would then try to relieve any pressure on Iran, even if it is for humanitarian reasons? And actually, our other guest asked a question, and I will re-ask that. Why now? Why do you think we're seeing this move now?
Well, one might feel inclined to be flabbergasted by the American proposal, but one is not, because one fully understands the sheer wickedness and depravity of the American government, because here we have Washington putting forward a proposal to relieve the suffering of the Iranian people at the hands of American sanctions. It is absolutely diabolical. It just demonstrates what an inverted world we live in, where the Americans can say to the Iranian people that we care for you, that we want to relieve you of the hardships you are experiencing because of our sanctions. It is an intolerable situation. It is not a sincere proposal, and naturally the Iranian government will want to have nothing to do with it. If Washington is genuinely committed, if it is genuinely sincere in wanting to sit down with its counterparts in Iran to diffuse the tension that the Americans have created with Iran, then first things first, the Americans have to drop the bitter, severe economic sanctions on Iran. Because until the Americans drop those sanctions, then the Iranians will not sit down with the Americans, because the Americans are causing a great deal of pain and suffering in Iran because of the sanctions. The Iranian government has a great deal of dignity. The Iranian people have a lot of self-respect. Why on earth would they sit down with people who have been causing them so much pain? If someone wants to hurt you and is causing you a lot of pain, would you really believe them if they then turned around and say to you, but I want to ease the pain that I'm causing to you? It is absolutely preposterous, and it just demonstrates once again the diabolical nature of the United States of America.
Well, Kenneth, the former U.S. Treasury official Brian O'Toole says with the implementation of this system or this mechanism, no banks or companies will even want to take the chance to trade with Iran due to Washington's threats. Now, again, we go back. You asked the question, why at this time? What exactly do you think Washington is trying to do? Or do you think that it is for the global market to try to show that it is or has a humanitarian side to itself? Or what do you think is the goal of all this? Because it would be obvious that the Iranians themselves would not believe that Washington really cares about humanitarian needs. So who's the audience for all of this in your perspective?
Well, I mean, I concur with the previous guest. What we have here is basically a torture method of pain and pleasure. You know, on the one hand you inflict great pain, and on the other hand you say the pain will stop if you do what we would like you to do. And so this torture method is what the Americans have been inflicting on the people of Iran for decades now. I think the economic pressures of capitalism are a really big driving force. The intensification and monitoring of online of people is what's at the heart of this. What the Americans are basically trying to do is follow the concept that data is power. And in Iran, as in everywhere else, social life is being basically saturated by corporate actors who are after profit, unregulated profit. And really, the military-industrial complex is being invited into Iran by the US government. What they're saying is that we're going to push this door open, we're going to use force to push this door open, and you guys can come in under the guise of humanitarian aid as the Trojan horse. And when you're in there, give us as much information as you can. So I think it's an economic move by the Americans to put further pressure on the economic sanctions that exist in Iran already. It's actually the height of hypocrisy to be in a situation where, on the one hand, you're allowing people, children, elderly people, to suffer great pain because they can't get the medication that they need because of sanctions, and on the other hand, try to create this notion that all of a sudden the Americans have woken up, Washington has woken up, and said we're going to be the good guys now. You know, it's completely unbelievable, and I don't think anyone across the world who's sense of politics, any sense of history, and any sense of humanity will believe what's being tried by the U.S. government now.
And we saw back in the late 90s and 2000s the U.S.'s pressure on Iraq and the sanction regime that they're disputed how many, especially children, died. At least 500,000, though some say, children died. At the end of the day, though, nothing happened to the United States. I think the question here is, where is the so-called international community? Why is it that the United States can make these unilateral decisions and basically nothing happens to Washington?
Well, I might add, first of all, that in the context of America's sanctions on Iraq in the 1990s, Madeleine Albright, when confronted by a journalist who said that perhaps 1 million Iraqis had died because of American sanctions, Madeleine Albright, one of the most wretched women to have ever come out of America, replied it was, and I'm paraphrasing, I believe, it was a price worth paying. Yes. Now, you asked me about the international community. Well, what is the international community exactly? I prefer to say the United Nations. When American and British politicians talk about the international community, they are really talking about Western countries and countries which back those Western countries. So principally, they are talking about America, Britain, and countries that are vehement supporters of Washington and London, such as Israel and Saudi Arabia, and I suppose you can add into that Canada, Australia, and New Zealand. So there is no such thing as an international community. There is a United Nations. The international community is actually causing an immense amount of pain and suffering in Iran. And of course, that international community is led principally by America, followed by its sidekick, Britain. If there is to be a resolution to what is happening to Iran at the moment, then I feel the only way that will be achieved will be at the United Nations, because there it is at the United Nations where Iran has a great deal of support. Many countries around the world are very sympathetic to Iran's plight, to the bullying that Iran has experienced.
But Marcus, at the end of the day, you said the United Nations would be the way, but at the end of the day, then we have the veto of the Security Council, and basically anything that is said by all the rest of the countries, all the U.S. and its allies have to say is that they disagree, and that's it. So I think this is the question at hand, that the United States, whether we're talking about what it did to Iraq or what's it doing to Iran right now, Venezuela or Cuba or so many other countries, the point of it is that really there seems to be no counterbalance in this world today legally to enforce international law. Your take on that, Kenneth?
Well, we have the international community, whatever that means, and the United Nations, which has been completely and utterly unable to intervene, not just in this situation, but historically, has done very badly in terms of supporting the global south, which I would call the progressive nations of the world, who want to work together and who are up against the West. The situation, though, we have is that I think we have to have a division when we discuss this between the economics and the politics. Of course, the military-industrial complex is politics and is economics, but the notion of surveillance capitalism, which is what I think is at hand here in terms of how the Americans are operating, not just in Iran, but across the world, is that they feel that the terrain of the nation state is something which they cannot respect because corporations have taken over nation states. The economies are run by corporations, and corporations want to have control over any area, any land. It doesn't matter whether it's an Islamic Republic or a communist state or a capitalist state. These corporations want to actually control data. They want to control the lives of people. They want to tell people what to do, what to eat, how to live, and how to die. And I think what the Americans are doing are trying to push their power, trying to say that basically Iran cannot buy where it wants to buy. The international markets are controlled by us. The banking system is controlled by us. And of course, that's not true at all. And as the previous guest has said, there is a movement against the United States. And I believe that's been growing over the past 5 to 10 years. We've seen many countries stand up against the United States, which we hadn't done in the past. And these are not countries which were traditionally revolutionary or oppositional. Mm-hmm. So I have some hope in the global South, let's call it, in people working together to push what is basically a dying and desperate American hegemony.
Right, because there are many that say, I mean, it's not just Iran that they're pressuring, because when they don't allow other countries, and other countries will be punished if they actually deal with Iran, then that shows the type of unilateralism and the type of pressure that the United States is actually inflicting against other countries too. So one would think that other countries also would stand up against this bullying type of attitude of the United States. Do you think that it's just a matter of time before we see that, Marcus?
Well, I believe we are already witnessing that. The Syrian people have not achieved an outright victory yet against American-backed terrorists, but they are on the verge of achieving that decisive victory. We see Venezuela, which since the beginning of the year has been under enormous pressure from the Americans, and through their lackey Juan Guaido, but the Venezuelan people have defied Washington. I agree with what the previous guest said. There is always hope, and for me, my hope for a more stable, for a more peaceful, for a more just, and for a more balanced world lies with Russia. If we return to the 1990s, Russia was on its knees. Russia was heading to its grave. And that is where we saw the reality, the true face of America, when it saw its opportunity to achieve global dominance, global hegemony, and it did it in the most barbaric, in the most aggressive manners. And of course, the first victims of America following the dissolution of the Soviet Union were the Serbs. And look what the Americans did to the Serbs. But in 2019, Russia is again a superpower. It is Russia that has played an instrumental role, along with Iran, in defeating American objectives in Syria. Russian support to Venezuela has proved critical in Venezuela prevailing for the time being over the American threat. And look at the relationship between Moscow and Tehran. It is so unbelievably strong politically, economically, culturally, and militarily. And whilst Iran has survived for 40 years against tremendous odds against it in the form of America, and we should applaud that, Iran does need assistance. Israel and Saudi Arabia have a superpower backing them in the form of America, and it is absolutely imperative that Iran has a superpower backing them in the form of Russia. Okay. So for me, The Iran's future lies with its people and also with the assistance it receives from Russia. It is absolutely crucial.
Right, well, Kenneth, I mean, some analysts say that with this latest move by Washington, it proves that the U.S.'s maximum pressure campaign has actually failed. Otherwise, there would be no need for it to try to use other methods to stop Iran. And it shows that, as a matter of fact, due to all of this pressure, that Iran has had to become more and more self-reliant and creative in getting around these sanctions and basically counting on itself. And in many ways, it has strengthened Iran. Your take?
I think the resilience of Iran, of the Iranian people, of the Iranian government, not just to survive this onslaught of several decades, but actually to maintain enough power to be able to be active in the region, to protect not just itself, but to offer protection to countries in the region, to Syria, to Lebanon, to a whole range of countries, is incredibly important. It's important that Iran, a country which the Americans would like to see on its knees, is not just resisting US intervention, it's actually helping other countries to resist as well. And I think this is fundamentally important, that the resistance to American imperialism is something which comes out of Iran and comes out of the global south and doesn't just rely on superpowers, because we've been in that position before. And I think it's very important that whilst Iran can look to Russia and can look to China, these are very important allies and powerful allies, there also has to be a movement of national independence and international cooperation across the global south with countries, whether it's Russia or China, that is there to support them and not destroy them, which is the aim of the United States. The aim of the United States is global domination, imperialism, and the triumph of surveillance capitalism. And we've seen recently, over the past decade, the flames of war are being fanned more and more by the United States. But on the other hand, I think the flames of hope are there, not just in countries like Venezuela, not just in countries like Syria, but in young people across the world, okay, who are much more than previously, are becoming much more politically aware.
On that note, I have to end the program. Appreciate both of you being with us. Lecturer at Coventry University, Kenneth Vero, out of London. Also out of London, publisher and editor, Politics First, Marcus Papadopoulos. And as always, the viewers, we appreciate you being with us on another debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Hope to see you next time.